It's John Finnemore's souvenir programme.
Good evening. My name is Roger Wattis, and I am a member of Britain's Silent Majority. Because we hear an awful lot these days, don't we, about giving the minorities a voice. And that's fine. I'm all for that. As long as we also give the majority a voice. And it should be a louder voice. Because there's more of us. Because, make no mistake, the silent majority are the last remaining persecuted minority. And when the majority is in the minority, that's an offence against justice, democracy and maths. And with that in mind, I'm speaking to you today as a member of the silent majority who's decided to stop being silent and tell you what he reckons. For instance, language. Shall I tell you the sixth worst thing about political correctness? After the loss of our liberties, the rape of our culture, the Marxist regime in our schools, the Guardian, and not being able to get a gollywog with my jam. It is the erosion of the great British sense of humour. I don't mind telling you that I'm renowned in my circle for my jokes. My three jokes. One about the gay terrorist, the one about the Irishman with a wooden leg, and the one about the octopus. And now, under the suffocating nanny PC regime, I can't tell any of them. The octopus is Jewish. That's outrageous, because say what you like about the English, but our saving grace, the thing we've always been famous for, is our ability to laugh at other people. But now it's all differently able, differently tall, differently not a pufter. And bar green sheep. I mean, for goodness sake, what was wrong with bar black sheep? It wasn't implying the sheep was wrong or bad or good at running. It was simply saying that he was black, he had three bags of wool, which there's no indication he didn't pay for. And he's a generous donor in the community. It's a hymn to integration, if anything. Well, that's all from me for now. If you enjoyed this message of sturdy common sense, you may want to look out for my full 3.5-hour lecture coming soon to a village hall or corner of the pub near you. I hope to see you there. Mine's a Worthington cream flow. And that's a pint, please, barman, not a kilometre. My name's Roger Wattis, founder member of the Silent Majority. Good night.
So, Mr. Croft, I gather you have some innovation you wish to put before me.
Yes, sir. In a nutshell, I believe I have hit upon a formula for an entirely new type of dog show.
Indeed. And how did you first become interested in dog shows, Mr. Croft?
I think it was when I realized I had a name that a dog could easily say.
I see. Well, nevertheless, I fear I cannot believe that there is any profitable type of dog show left to be invented.
And yet I believe I have one.
Come, sir. There exists now contests, the purpose of which is to determine which dog is the fastest, which dog is the superior fighter, even which dog is the most effective at bending sheep to his will. What aspect of the canine can possibly remain unjudged?
My idea is this. A competition to determine which dog looks most like a dog.
Which dog looks most like a dog?
Precisely.
But do not all dogs look like dogs?
Perhaps. But some dogs look more like dogs than other dogs do.
No, they don't.
They will if we say they do. I propose that we, as the organizers of the contest, draw a picture of a dog. And the winner will be the dog that looks most like the picture we drew.
But dogs differ widely from each other in appearance. Surely are different breeds and so on.
So much the better. We can have sub-competitions. The Cocker Spaniel that looks most like a Cocker Spaniel. The Coelium most like a Coelium. And then the winners of these contests will be pitted up against one another, and we will finally be able to determine whether the Labrador that looks most like a Labrador looks more like a Labrador than the pug that looks most like a pug looks like a pug.
And tell me, will the dogs at any point be called upon to do anything?
On no account. No, the temperament, abilities or character of the dog will be entirely irrelevant. Our sole interest will be in selecting the dog most like the picture of a dog drawn by us.
But what can a dog or an owner possibly do to make a dog look more like the picture?
Nothing. But they can breed future dogs in such a way as to attempt to get closer to it.
Ah, I believe I understand at last. By this method, you hope to encourage wise breeding of the animals to ensure healthier, fitter specimens in the future.
Not really, no. It will encourage intense inbreeding from a catastrophically small stock, thus making dogs less healthy, less fit, and more mad.
And for God's sake, man, why do it?
I think it will help sell dog food.
Oh, well, we do sell dog food.
Precisely. Gillian.
Well, I have to take issue with Michael on one thing. I thought the character of Catalina was the heart and soul of the book, and if he wasn't torn apart by the astonishing ending, frankly, I'm sorry for him.
No, I quite agree. The ending is beautifully done.
Yes, without wishing to spoil the ending at all, there is a wonderful moment where it becomes clear that Catalina has been blind through the whole story, which really... What?
You've spoiled the ending.
No, I said I didn't want to.
Yeah, I know, I heard you, and then you did.
No, it's all right if you say you don't want to spoil the ending.
No, it's all right if you warn people you're going to spoil the ending, and it's okay if you don't spoil the ending, but you didn't do either of those. You spoiled the ending.
Yes, I did. Blast, I'm sorry. Sorry, everyone, I always get those two confused. Sorry. Morning, O King Herod the Mighty, fount of all wisdom, master of my destiny, before whom I am as the wheat beneath the scythe, O holy sun, from
whence... Yes, all right, Kenneth, you can dispense with the formalities.
As you wish, sire. How can I be of assistance?
Well, I've just had a rather odd dinner with three wise men who are passing through.
Oh, yes. And who would they be?
I don't think they gave their names. They just introduced themselves as three wise men.
Slightly cocky.
I thought that. They said something rather worrying. Now, we were talking about this and that, and I happened to notice they had quite a lot of myrrh with them. And you know how I like myrrh.
Oh, yes, Manage. You're a myrrh-aholic.
I really am. So, I, you know, hinted I'd quite like a bit of myrrh. And this chap said he was sorry, but it was a present for someone. And anyway, cut a long story short, it turns out that they're all going to see a baby who's about to be born in a stable and will be king of the Jews.
Ah.
And I'm the king of Judea.
Indeed you are.
Which is only some of the Jews, so this kid will technically outrank me.
Well, if it happened. Doesn't seem very likely, to be honest. Once again, I point out you only had these men's word for it, that they are, in fact, wise.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't think there's anything to worry about.
I'm going to kill all the boys in Bethlehem under 2 years of age.
Well, that's one way we could go, yes.
So the first thing we're going to need is quite a lot of men with swords.
I'm sorry, can I just recap?
Mm-hmm.
There's one baby being born who might one day be king of the Jews, mm-hmm. So we should kill all the baby boys in Bethlehem.
Yes.
And we're not worried that might be a bit of an overreaction.
Well, I mean, we don't know what the baby will look like, do we?
No, good point. Do we think it will look like a two-year-old?
Well, we can't be too careful.
Yeah, I just wonder, sire, if there's a slightly less infanticidal solution to the problem. Like maybe sending a few soldiers to check out all the stables.
No, I see where you're coming from. But I think I'll stick with killing all the babies. It's just easier.
I'm not sure it will be easier, actually. I wouldn't be surprised if people were really quite cheeky about hiding their sons or running away from Bethlehem. I mean, they all worship you, O great king, but you know how funny mothers get. It occurs to me that if we do kill all the babies, but the particular one we want slips through the net and escapes to Egypt or somewhere, we're going to be left with pretty red faces and a lot of dead babies. It's going to be something of a public relations nightmare.
Right, I understand all that, but I really think I need to go with my gut instinct on this one. I mean, King of the Jews, that would be really annoying.
Okay. As it happens, O King, the wife and I live in Bethlehem.
Oh, yes.
Strangely enough, we have a little boy ourselves.
Oh, really? How old is he?
18 months.
Oh, dear, I am sorry.
Yes. The thing is, I'm reasonably certain he's not the king of the Jews. And I'm absolutely certain he's not going to be born in a stable in the near future.
No, I believe you. Of course I do. But we can't be seen to be making exceptions. That would make us very unpopular.
You know... I can't help wondering, sire, if this is actually less to do with the possible threat of a possible king of the Jews that some nameless wise men told you about, and more to do with getting back at me for beating you in that chariot race.
Well, I couldn't possibly comment, but maybe next time you'll remember who's the sodding king.
Right. My name is Oliver Ball. I've heard all the jokes. Don't bother. Video submission in support of application D312. So, why do you want to be a contestant on Eggheads? Scantness of choice, really. Mastermind won't give me the time of day. Millionaire's a joke. Pointless, I think, is rather well named. So, that just leaves you guys, really. Tell us about your team. Right, the team's called the White Hart Half-Wits. The name was not my idea. You call it irony. I call it putting ourselves at a psychological disadvantage from the get-go. But there you are. Got the polo shirts done now, so we're stuck with it. Now, I see you say we are seeking vibrant and diverse contestants. Well, I don't know what you think you mean by vibrant, unless you're looking for contestants that oscillate rapidly. But if by diverse you mean what I think you mean, you'll be pleased to hear that one of us is Indian and one of us is gay. I say Indian, he's from Poole, but, you know, he looks Indian. Whereas actually, thinking about it, the gay one, Dermot would probably have to ask him something about it because he's one of those ones where you can't tell to look at him. It's not me, though. Oh, I've got a girlfriend. Been together 6 years. Probably get married soon. Basically, I've got an alert set up on my savings account. When it reaches a certain level, none of your business, I automatically get a text message, and then I'll think about popping the question. Or I might forward it to Selena, see if she wants to do it. Equality. Liam, yeah, when you edit this, can you cut everything after me not being gay? Great. Yeah, so there's me, I'm not diverse at all, I'm afraid. But then there's the Indian guy, the gay guy, and we don't have a regular fourth member at the moment, so we can make it a woman if that'll help. Selena will do it. She won't know anything, but she'll look good, and Bernard and me will pick up the slack. Okay, one thing. I've read through the terms and conditions. Probably surprised you, but I always do, even on iTunes. This one you've got here, you hereby grant us the right to use your name, voice and or likeness in connection with the promotion of the programme throughout the world, in all media, in perpetuity. Well, no, surprisingly, I don't grant that in perpetuity. Do people fall for it? No, if you want us to do the show, let me know, we'll talk terms. I think you'll find me reasonable. So, yeah, Liam, just cut before the yawn.
Michael.
Well, you know, as an honest-to-goodness, unpretentious spider, I thought it was really rather good. The denouement in particular was practically worthy of the carry.
Oh, absolutely. I don't think I'm giving anything away if I say that the Vice President turns out to be the mole in the White House.
Yes, you are.
Am I? I don't think I am.
You are. You're giving away the whole film.
Oh, sorry, everyone. We really have to stop doing this live. Good evening. Here is the news at 6 o'clock on Thursday, the 27th of September. The Prime Minister has announced that in response to the crime wave over the summer, he is going to give the police new powers, effective immediately. They will now be able to fly and breathe underwater. Sir Paul Bledworth, the Commissioner of the Metropolitan Police, has welcomed the new measures, which he described as way cool.
This is the news on Friday, the 28th of September. In response to vehement protests and threatened strike action from leaders of the other emergency services in the wake of the controversial so-called Flying Policeman Bill, the Prime Minister has relented and agreed to give them special powers too. Accordingly, from tonight, firemen will be able to shoot ice from their fingertips and paramedics can turn back time.
Here is the news on Monday, the 1st of October. The government's flying policeman bill has continued to attract controversy, with many complaining that since the total eradication of crime shortly afterwards, the police have had nothing to do and have become a nuisance, flying pointlessly up and down motorways and clustering for some reason around street lamps. However, Sir Paul Bledworth has dismissed calls for his officers to relinquish their powers, stating, "You'll have to catch us first," and then soaring to the top of Big Ben.
Here is the news on Wednesday, 3rd of October. The government has rejected proposals by the opposition to even things up a bit by giving new powers to criminals, such as X-ray vision and the ability to talk to cats. Instead, the Prime Minister has announced today that while the police can keep their new powers, he's going to level the playing field by giving them new weaknesses, including an allergy to cinnamon and a glass leg.
This is the news on Thursday, the 4th of October. Chaos continues to reign following the glass-legged policeman bill, which has so far led to 85% of the force rendered out of action and cuts and lacerations suffered by almost 10,000 people across the country. In a joint statement by everyone concerned, they all apologised for being so silly. "I bloody wish all this had never happened," said the Prime Minister, "and hopefully, if the paramedics agree to help us out, by this time next week, it won't have done."
I have more to say. Recycling. Oh, come on. Are you seriously asking me to take time out of my busy day to put my bottles and paper in a different bin? I mean, a different bin? Two bins in my kitchen, a bin, and then another bin? I'm sorry, but that is bins gone mad. You cannot expect that every single time I go to throw some rubbish away, I should stop, look at it, think what kind of rubbish it is, and then select a bin accordingly. That's more effort than I put into choosing my children's schools. But I tell you what, I will do it once the Chinese have done it. As I understand it, the Chinese produce more rubbish in a single day than I do. Loads more. So why should I stop if they're allowed to carry on? What is this, one law for me and another law for the Chinese? Is this some sort of elaborate thank you for gunpowder, chess and the idea of putting peas in with the rice? Well, I'm not standing for it anymore until someone can provide me with concrete evidence that everyone in China has done their recycling. I'm not doing mine. And that also goes for doing my taxes, cleaning my teeth and picking Matthew up from Sea Scouts. Good night. All right, not bad. OK, now leave the crash mats where they are. Listen to me. Everyone get into pairs. Now, wait. Listen. Get into pairs with someone of the opposite height. Go.
What?
Come on, 8W. It's not rocket science. The opposite height from you. If you're short, find someone tall. If you're tall, find someone short. Go.
I'm average height.
Yeah, me too. What's my opposite?
Well, use your brains. If you're average height, your opposite is someone of unaverage height. So pair up with someone either short or tall. Go.
But sir, all the short and tall people are paired up with each other.
Oh, give me strength. All right, OK. Listen. If you're in a pair, break up. Let's try and make this so simple even AW can't mess it up. Everyone pair up with someone shorter than them. Go. Everyone pair up with someone taller than them. Go! All right. Half of you pair up with someone taller than you, half with someone shorter. Go!
Sir, how do we know whether we're in the half?
Oh, forgive me, strength. All right. Listen, if your name begins with a letter from A to M, pair with someone taller. If it's N to Z, pair with someone shorter. Go!
Sir, my name begins with C, but everyone left is shorter than me.
Yeah, and I'm the same.
Yeah, all right. All right, listen. Everyone line up against the wall, shortest, tallest. Go.
No, but all you need is
All right, Melanie, this will be much quicker if we don't all try and stick our oar in. All right. Now, listen carefully. Let's see if you can do this without another silly, unnecessary mess-up. Okay, so the two people on either end, that's the shortest and tallest, pair off. Go. Good. Now the next two. Go. Good. Now the next two. Go. And the next. Keep going. Good.
Sir, when we get to the middle, won't the last two be
Melanie, I won't tell you again. It's working perfectly well. All our pairs are of different heights and...
Sir.
Yes, I can see. All right.
Sir,
be quiet. I am thinking.
Sir, what about if we all just pair with someone who's a different height from us?
Come on, Melanie, pay attention. That's what I said the first time and it didn't work.
But no, you said the opposite, Art.
Yeah, will you be quiet? I'm thinking.
Everyone, bear with someone a different eye from them.
What? No, don't listen to them, mate. You just stay where you are until... Oh, well, good. Good. You've managed to sort yourselves out. Good. Now, in each pair, I want the shortest person to... Ah, good. See you all next term. Have a lovely summer. And finally, very quickly, a revival of an Agatha Christie play on Shaftesbury Avenue, which I've been told quite emphatically, actually, to be very, very careful about. So all I'll say is that it's about a certain number of characters who are faced with a certain dilemma, which is ultimately resolved, or not. Gillian.
Yes, well, this play, Death Net...
No, that's fine, carry on.
Well, it's a well-enough-made murder mystery.
Shh. No, that's fine too, yep.
But, frankly, the West End needs another Agatha Christie revival like a hole in the head.
Sorry. Fine. Michael, very quickly.
No, I completely disagree with Gillian. It's a terrific whodunit, and if it gets people back out from in front of their TVs and into the theatres, I'm all for it. Go see.
Thank you. So, that's the Doctor Did It at the Apollo until Death Note!
Immigration. Now, I have nothing against foreigners. I am fond of terra masalata and I have been to Bonn. But what you have to remember about foreigners is that they have the whole of the rest of the world to themselves. And all we have is this little overcrowded island. And it is an overcrowded island, ladies and gentlemen. Make no mistake about that. I drove into London today from Maidenhead, and there were people everywhere. So if you must come here, for goodness sake, don't come to London and the South East. We're full. Go to Exmoor, Dartmoor, the Brick and Beacons, the North. And while at it, is it so much to ask that while you're here, you observe our customs, our way of life, and that includes a certain understated stoicism, a well-developed sense of fair play, a mistrust of strangers, and a certain amount of good-humoured racism. What was I saying? Oh, yes, we are an overcrowded island. No man is an island, but some men are an island, and that's us. We are. And what I'm saying is, God doesn't build a sea by mistake. With the English Channel... He's giving us a hint, a little nudge in the ribs. He's saying, you chaps, you English, you're something special. You're not my chosen people. You've come along too late for that, but you're my first reserves. So, here's your island. Enjoy it. I've given you a fertile soil, a clement climate, a self-deprecating sense of humour, and a queen. And I've also given you a moat. And it's there for a reason. When the others come queuing up, and they will, you don't have to be standoffish. But you don't have to take everyone. The Australians, for instance. I have nothing against the Australians. This is still God speaking, obviously. I have nothing against the Australians, but let's face it, they had their chance at living here and they blew it. My name's Roger Wattis, found a member of the Silent Majority. Good night.
You gave us love.
Velociraptor to the humble herbivore. We Gigantoraptor's jaws. One designer, Captain Dinosaur. I've seen it, Captain Dinosaur. You'll sign up in the skies. We're terribly excited. We can't believe our eyes. And as it comes towards us, this massive meteor.
Well, since you ask me for the credits of this programme, I do have a list of names you may find informative. I myself, in point of fact, wrote and starred in the show, but naturally, modesty forbids me from ever telling you my name, save for one cryptic clue hidden deep within the title. I took my proposal for this to the BBC, my proposal essentially being me demonstrating the sound of my own voice and explaining how fond I am of it. They suggested I should employ some actors to do voices. Voices, said I, why, I can do all the voices we could need. Normal, silly French, and two types of posh. But they insisted, and so I trolled the music halls, carnivals, and asylums of the land until I had assembled Gary Quinlan, Simon Caine, Laurie Lewin, and Margaret Caborn Smith, this last, an aspiring young actress, who had wisely added the Caborn early in her career, as it was clear that no one would ever get very far in a theatre with a name like Maggie Smith. All was ready, but what, I suddenly thought, if we should need original music? At that moment, I heard a barrel organ out in the street, and rushing out, I secured the services of Susanna Pierce, after slipping 10 shillings to her organ grinder. Finally, we were ready, a ragtag army of misfits and mavericks, ready to go up against my arch-nemesis, the sinister figure known to the world only as the producer, but to me, as Ed Morrish. Good night!